The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2014 Annual Conference, copyright 2014. If you have purchased this recording, you are free to make multiple copies for your school's use. You may not sell copies of the audio or post copies on the internet. Order additional conference recordings from this year's conference or previous conferences at store.accsedu.org. Find out more about the Association of Classical and Christian Schools at www.accsedu.org. Thank you.
My name is Ann Baker. I am the head of Grammar School of the Augusta Classical Academy in Mechanicsville, New York, about 45 minutes north of Albany, up near the Adirondack Mountains. It's a beautiful place to be. We just finished our fifth year. So just to make sure you are clear on why you are here, I am here to present questions we encourage you to ask if you are starting a school at the very beginning years of your school. We don't have all the answers. Obviously, none of us do. We're going to tell you a little bit about our story and how we've answered the questions, but really my point is to give you questions to ask that you may answer quite differently than we do. A school in upstate New York may be very different than a school in Pensacola, Florida, although we may stick with the same foundational principles. So, having said that, if you're in the wrong place, I give you an open book to leave if that's not why you're here. Matt Hopkins, our headmaster here, will also be presenting this afternoon on more of an upper school mission focus. I'll be focusing on the grammar school. So with that understanding, let's go ahead and pray. Lord God, before your throne, we ask that you will anoint our words, our thoughts, our meditation, that they might be completely aligned with your will, and therefore pleasing in your sight. In your name we pray. Amen. We are really here to encourage those of you who haven't started to get started. And perhaps some of you, let me just take a survey. Anybody want to start but has to get started? Marvelous. Anybody who's finished the first year? Super. 2 years. Free. Four. I'm not going to stop the bottom. Okay, we're five. Okay, great. Excellent. Okay. So,
can I just ask one other question?
Yes.
Are there anyone in here that is not just starting from scratch, but that is transitioning from some of the industry classical? I would love to network with those individuals because that's what we're doing.
Wonderful. As a school or as a
We've been in business for 7 years.
Okay.
And we're now moving into the classical model.
Okay.
So we're navigating those waters, and we'd love to talk to others who...
Okay, so the question is, are there any other schools who have been in existence for X number of years and are making a transition to a classical pedagogy who would like to network with other folks who are doing the same?
Yeah. Okay. I'm from all of Wisconsin. We've been open for 25 years in Christian school, but just small. It's 2008.
And then the fourth year we had kindergarten through third, And then this year, in our fifth year, is the first year we've had every grade, but as you might imagine, some of those are combined, which is one of the challenges that we address. So that's just a little picture for where we came from. In that fourth year, we had what we call a bridge, and I'll get back to you on that a little bit. Part of what we want to encourage you to do is to look at what are your assets as a group, as a people, in your location. What are your liabilities? Build on your assets. Discern what they are and build on that. Because we were built from a group of homeschooling families, we have several who have had 15 years plus of homeschooling their own children in classical pedagogy. We have a great relationship there. We're tapping into that. One of our liabilities is that in the Albany broad capital district area, public schools are considered to be strong. So we don't have a lot of people who are saying, oh, all public schools are horrible, let's go look at all the other options. Similarly, a liability that's actually becoming an asset over time is, and this is speaking again in generalities, we have a handful of Christian non-classical schools in the area that are viewed as great if you want a nice spiritual atmosphere, but if you want good academics, don't go there. So at the beginning, people viewed us in the same. So it began as a liability. It's actually becoming an asset now because people are discovering that that is not, in fact, true. And the word of mouth that is going out is positive, hence the reason why our grammar school is almost doubled next year, which is very exciting and overwhelming all at the same time. I'm going to begin again. This is just a quick surface breeze through on purpose. I'm going to try to get rid of that X there. Nope. There we go. So, mission, vision, core understandings, this is really for everybody. Say this is for those of you starting from ground zero. You want to start with that mission and that vision. Your mission is takes why you exist. Why are you here? Your vision, generally speaking, is spells out how you're getting there and what's your end product. What does your graduate look like? They don't like to think of children as products, but children want to know. Children are going to come in your school and see your older students and either say, I want my child to be like that, or I don't. And so what is that end goal? That's what we need to start off in our vision. We encourage you to pray. It sounds like the obvious, but we don't need to say it first, we need to do it first. One of the joys of being in a startup, and I hope in non-startups as well, is the joy of seeing God working every day, all the time. And because this is always much bigger than us, it forces us on our knees, and that's a good thing. And so we need to remind ourselves and encourage one another in the broader classical school community and in our own schools, pray first. In the tyranny of the urgent, we tend not to, but pray first. God is working, and that's exciting. We are building the foundation. Like Ryan Ford, don't just buy those small things. They may seem tedious as you are going through those little building things, but they are foundational and they're key. So enjoy them. Be blessed by them. And remember in Zechariah 4:6, it says, not by might, not by power, but by my spirit, says the Lord. No, you cannot do it. I cannot do it. But God is doing it. And when God is doing it, that's very exciting. So start there. Guard against mission drift. I'm going to come up with this. If you can ever hear in the diagram, you can just write. Okay, good. I think you nailed the podium. So if you can't hear, let me know. Guard against mission drift. Always. I think it doesn't matter whether you're in your first year or in your 20th year. Always stay focused on the mission. And there are various forces that will threaten to derail us from that. One of the ones that seems to be there all the time is our very well-meaning parents who have great ideas. And we love those parents. and we love their energy, and we love their great ideas, but we need to be very careful that they not derail us from what our mission is. One of the things that's helpful to me personally is the understanding that as leaders, I'm going to make the assumption that there are a number of administrators in here, even as a teacher, of course you are a leader. As leaders, you're going to receive two things. You're going to receive flattery, and you're going to receive criticism. So I need to ask myself, how do I respond to both? And to make sure that neither flattery nor criticism derail me from the mission. And that, again, goes back to I need to be on my knees to be sure that I am walking in the Spirit and God is keeping me focused there. Ineffective communication, we'll come to communication later, but ineffective communication to those carrying out the mission can also be a key ingredient in mission drift. So those carrying out your mission, your teachers, administrators, faculty, et cetera, and your parents, who are all the ones who you're communicating to, what are all those pieces, tools through which you can beat the drum? We've heard that before. How are we beating the drum? Are we beating the drum verbally? And what publications, teacher papers go out? What will us opportunities to beat the drum? I don't know that they do that too much. What is our mission? Because the parents are coming to the school. We want them to be knowledgeable about the mission, but they all come in with their own little piece of why they're there. Are they there because their child can get into a great college? Are they there for whatever reason? And so we need to keep them focused on the mission and beat the drum through various means.
So you see, I'm asking with the question there then is how are you going to beat the drum? How are you going to get the mission out? There are a number of great ideas that I've heard in the last couple of days from other folks. We have the bees.
Board budget. Building buses. You could have several workshops on each of these, and I'll explain what I mean about buses in a moment. Be sure that everything, every one of these, as they get put into action, are aligned with biblical principles. When you look at your board, their primary job is to be the policy makers and keepers to some degree, although the keeping of it gets passed on to the administration as well. I encourage you not to get started without a policy manual in place. One of the things that we have done and been blessed by, we have been in a mentor relationship with another classical school who very graciously gave us their policy manual. They gave us their curriculum objectives. A huge gift, and this is just a wonderful note of how we can all come alongside one another. I encourage you, if you're not already in that sort of relationship, find a school who's willing to do that. Because when you look at a whole policy manual, if you're starting from scratch and don't have any experience writing a policy manual, don't really know what's supposed to go into it, it's great to start with something. And then through time, say, we'll keep this, and then we're going to rewrite that, and so forth. Same with the curriculum objectives. I have had grammar school going through those K through 6 objectives. It's not going to happen all in 1 year. It's going to happen over time. This works, this does not. I'm going to change that, but it's so helpful to start with something. So I encourage you to tap in with another school who can help you with that. Or also your strategic planners. They need that roadmap for how we're getting there. In going through a strategic planning process, and again, there are other workshops for this, you typically look at three things. It's called SWOT: what are your strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. So, and again, this is your ability to go back to assets and liabilities, what are your assets and liabilities, build on your assets. So as a self-analysis, if there is no strategic framework, will forever be chasing your tail. You're going to look back 10 years from now and say, you were here. What happened? We're doing this instead of driving forward. My encouragement to you, and I'm saying this without a lot of hands-on experience in strategic planning, but my experience and observation is I encourage you to outsource it. There are various groups of headache groups and so forth who including to hire to come help you walk through and design an effective strategic plan. One of the challenges of a board in a startup school is to transition from being operational to strategic. You know, when our school started, and Matt can speak to this more later, because he was one of the starting people, the board people are often those people who got on board, so to speak, to start the school. And they want to know where the pencils are coming. They're thinking pencils. They're not thinking strategic planning often. And so it's natural to be in an operational mode from the beginning. So how do you purpose to move from operational to strategic? We are just getting to that point. I'm in my third year here now with them. I see them making great strides in that in the fifth year. I'm sure it happens differently in different schools. That's just where we are at. The board's job is to learn the trust of the school is not to run the school. Building, all I'm going to say on building, is always look ahead. Always look ahead. I think it's going to be safe to assume, and we're certainly experiencing this, so I'm going to make that assumption based upon personal experience, but also what I see ACCS-wide. It's safe to assume you're going to grow. And we'll recommend not guarding that growth. But so always look ahead. Assume you're going to need more space this year. Never too soon to hear that one. Buses, I say that just to go with the bees. Maintain a positive relationship with the community, your headmaster. One of the things I love about our headmaster, he's a very visionary guy. You can't blink before he already knows who the town mayor is. He's making community relationships, I think, as important as believers. Who are we as believers in the community where God has put us? And of course, there are all sorts of positive practical implications to that as well. We've heard a lot about culture this week, building school culture, and we could talk on this and talk on this and talk more on this, and there are wonderful possibilities here. In building school culture, again, when we go back to that word vision, it requires vision to see what you want to see 5 years from now, what you want to see in the classrooms, what you want to see in the lunchroom, what you want to see in the bathrooms, what you want to see school-wide, things detailed as best you can. I've listed just sort of in an academic way various leadership forces that we work with as leaders. And I'm just going to go through them quickly. I want you to look at the three on the left as being very flexible. We can be flexible in those forces as we're planning the design of a classroom, as we're organizing our files, as we're looking at schedules, as we're looking at the best way to motivate students, as the song is sort of address some flexibility here. Somebody comes to us with an idea, great, let's try that. We don't want to be too fluid, but we want to be open. There's a degree of flexibility there. There's a degree of flexibility in how we carry out staff development. I'm going to note this just for a minute. When you are at the point of hiring a principal, we call them different things. We call them head of grammar, we call them head of upper. Really, the head of grammar, head of upper school, those who are in charge of staff development, who are in charge of mentoring teachers, who are in charge of working with students in personal ways, I highly recommend understanding that head of teachers is a principal teacher. It is very difficult to be, and it's not to say that I haven't seen this before, but very few and far between, very difficult to be a principal. On the other side, you have more of the symbolic and the cultural. So this is where we're going back to the mission and the vision. This is where you need to be resilient. Don't flex. If some great, well-meaning parent comes to you and says, I think you're really great if you did X. The first thing in my mind needs to be, does that support the mission and the vision? If it doesn't, I better not flex. Or we're going to drift and drift and drift from that mission, and I cannot yet see the fallout of that, but it's not going to be good. So when you're dealing with articulating the vision and mission to the parents, don't flex. When you are celebrating, how do we celebrate? If you're learning about feasts and so forth in a classical school, how do we celebrate? How do we show our mission and our vision in our medieval feasts? Questions we can throw out there. So places to be flexible, places to have stick-to-itiveness, stick to it. Don't move away from it. So a little bit on how have we done this. We have... is
with our co-curriculars? We don't have extracurriculars. And how do we schedule our co-curriculars such that we are guarding parents' time when we get into upper school athletics and so forth? People speak to that later. When do we schedule our special events? Are we gobbling up parents' weekends? So community, our community, since our one of our core understandings is that all education is discipleship and parents are discipling their children, how does that inform our admissions? Because the way that parents are or are not discipling their children at home, you know that's going to spill out of their classroom.
There are those core understandings. Parents are guards, are God's intended primary disciplers. The sin of parental abdication, and we see this nationwide, internationally. Parents are abdicating their responsibility. We will be very remiss to allow them to abdicate their responsibility. We would not like to do that. So we need to be careful not to do that in the decisions that we make.
Question for you, what will your admissions practices be governed by? One of the things we constantly say is because of that, those core understandings of parents discipling their children, we're recruiting families, we're not recruiting students. We have a couple of interviews with the parents and do our very best to ensure that they understand our mission there. Matt and I sort of giggle sometimes. We can be a little bit blunt. We'd rather be blunt and in your face, so to speak, right from the start, so you know exactly where we're coming from. So, one of the things that I taught Parent Coffin in an interview is the road will get bumpy. We are sinners and communities together. The road is going to get bumpy. When it gets bumpy, do you feel like you understand what our mission and our vision is well enough to ride those bumps together? And not jump off the boat or quick. Because if you're not sure, don't get off the boat. We need as builders of schools to be very careful in our admissions and be able to say, God is bigger, much bigger than this is another tuition. We need another tuition. How helpful that would be. God is bigger than that. Let's not restrict his work. So we need to be bold enough to say, probably will be gracious. Students are going to use what they learn. They're going to remember if you love them. And I've heard that said in various different ways in workshops I've been in so far, and I look very forward to hearing what Paul Tripp has to say. They're going to remember if you love them. Everything that we design in the school, every practice we undertake, every staff development goals we put out, agendas, practices, are they directing all of our communities to the community to love well? How will I personally love them? Am are in a season of life where we have seen a number of children come up from these Christian schools and graduate, and they want to have nothing to do with Christian schools. I think I'm seeing a lot of nodding heads. This should concern us greatly. What is it about how we are loving one another and loving our students that's going to lead our graduates to say something quite different? If I do the love of Christ when I look in my teaching eyes, I saw that. Another question for you. Are you going to have open houses? Or is your house always going to be open? I'm going to say we have landed on this here. We have leaned toward our house is always open. It is always open. We love, one of the things we tell parents in the admission process is you really don't understand classical education if you see the action. We love to have the parents come in and sit in on the classes with boundaries, of course, we guard the teachers in their time. So our house is always open in that sense. It's always open to the parents with reasonable boundaries. I'm not going to answer that question for you. What are the advantages of having an open house? We have said in the past we've had an open house or two. There's a great deal of energy and focus that gets put into that, and it's time, yes, to show, to present something. It's time for the students to present something. But it's really not showing classical education in action. So it's a time for great conversations and great food and for presentations, and that may be what you need at a certain time, but it doesn't really show classical education in process. So answer that for yourself. We have very much enjoyed what we call living room forums. Our large room, right now we are, 63? We're about 63 students, K-12, and so one of our privileges that we want to maintain as long as possible is we all have lunch together. Our kindergarten is half day all year long, so first through 12th grade has lunch together in a large room that we call the forum. This forum also is our upper school independent work area and so forth. We have what we call living room forums. We tend to overuse this word. And by that I mean existing parents will invite friends, interested parties to their living room in their home. And Matt and I, perhaps a board member, will come and meet with them. We have just loved these. I personally prefer these times over a formal let's get dressed up and stress out over making lots of food for an open house. I much prefer sitting in someone's living room and having a laid-back conversation with four couples who are considering classical education. They've got the space and time to ask every question that they might possibly have. And we're building relationships. I think that's really the reason that I love these living room forums. We build relationships with people in a way that a larger event does not allow for. Having said that, there are times for those larger events too, and those are just answers you need to find for yourself. But we could really, really love these living room forums. It's a time for us to beat that drum. It's also an opportunity for people here often, and I'm sorry, there's a word of mouth workshop at Kennesley. If you want to hear more about that, word of mouth is your best marketing tool. You can put thousands of dollars into great brochures, etc. Word of mouth is your greatest marketing tool, and a living room forum is a forum within which you can do that.
It sounds really interesting. It's kind of getting back for schools that have been in existence more than 5 years, kind of getting back to organic.
Yeah.
Now, are you finding that these three or four families were already homeschooled families? It would appear that your families that started the school were from homeschooling, so they're already pretty organized and they know they don't want to keep, they want to leave that hominess, if you will, kind of atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. So you're asking about the people who attend the uniform?
Yes, exactly.
We actually are growing into a broader, it's a great question, we're growing into a broader audience. From the young parents whose children are not yet kindergarten age, we're looking at all of their possibilities, to families who have students in public school are not happy for whatever reason. Another way in which we guard against mission drift in our very candid interviews is we see a number of people coming away from a school. We don't want them to come because they're coming away from, and we want them to be coming toward us. And so our job is to articulate what they're coming for, so that they can drop and forget and let go of what they're walking away from and be excited about what they're walking toward. Did that answer your question about the form? Processes, deadlines, fees, and admissions process, those are things that you need to answer yourself. What is your student application going to look like? At what age do you want student input in that application? We request that students fourth grade enough to write their own essay. Why do you want to come? What are going to be your admission requirements? These are very broad questions, purposefully. What's going to be your means of assessing readiness? Right from kindergarten up, what does your kindergarten screening look like? I have what would be broadly termed a very developmental approach to kindergarten. So while I load it, yes, do they know their numbers and so forth, there's a lot more than that. It's can they hop, can they skip, how do they carry on a conversation? This is broad developmental screening in kindergarten. What will your screening look like at each age? We're still answering those things as well. But you want to be sure as best you can that that student is going to be able to succeed in your school, if they're not. I do, and I'm going to put out a piece of paper, here, a piece of paper, to, if you put your email and write it back to your mom, I'd be happy to email that to you. Okay. Guard your growth. Guard against the temptation to accept every applicant. I spoke about that. Guard your culture. Guard your class makeup and structure. We have a class limit of 12 students. That's part of our guarding our culture. Everybody's going to have a different student maximum. What's going to be yours? I'm not there anymore. Okay. Guard your growth, kindergarten screenings.
Okay, what is going to be your structure of your class? I'm going to go back to the bridge for a minute. In our growth, we did that funny thing with upper school first, and then we get kindergarten, and then we added grades. This is just an example of building on your assets. One of our assets going back was well-equipped homeschooling parents. And so we have what we call the bridge, and the fourth to sixth grade bridge. And what that entailed was 3 days of instruction with one teacher, 2 days at home. So it's a step from homeschooling into the school so they can get used to the curriculum, the instruction, phasing in. I would very much recommend not doing that unless you have a teacher who is well equipped in classical pedagogy as well as an understanding of the curriculum. One of the challenges is that you're working with parents and you're dependent upon parents doing their piece on those 2 days. So, think wisely, pray first before you jump into something like that. It has worked well with us. It included Latin tutorials, a couple of online classes. It's not coming back on?
It's not coming back on.
You have your PowerPoint papers. Those of you who have your PowerPoint papers, what's next? Yes.
Your bridge, is that a temporary thing or is it ongoing?
We did it 4th through 6th grade for 1 year. And our variables were such that the next year we were able to open classes for each of those grades. So a bridge, as we call it, could be with any grades. And we have a couple of brochures on that if you're interested in seeing those later. And that's actually what we see next. What will be your class structure? The two pages that you can't read because the little letters are too small are the pamphlet that we put out for the bridge. Again, there are copies up here if you'd like to view one. Again, I'd be happy to email one to you if that's helpful.
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah.
Our school, like yours, is in its 5th year. I think one of our biggest challenges was the combined class issue.
And I don't know.
Okay. So I figured there would be other people that would want to know about that.
Yeah. The next slide is the schedule that the rich person put out, and for the sake of time, I'm going to skip right through that. We combined classes. We actually, last year, combined K-1. That was hard. The such a vast difference between a kindergarten student and a first grade student. Did we do it? Did they do well? Did they gain mastery? Yes, because there were so few children. What I want to do again? No. But it worked well for our time. So last year we had combined K-1 and minus K-3. The year before this one. This past year, we had kindergarten separately, and then first, second combined, third, fourth combined, fifth, sixth combined. Next year, we're able to split the third and fourth, and the other combined classroom will remain combined and overflowing. What we have done, and I'm just going to scratch the surface on this, hoping that we can pull out some questions. You need to separate math. If you have combined classes, you need to separate math, Latin, reading, grammar, spelling. Those are those incremental pieces. So how are you going to bring in part-time teachers and or schedule your classroom structure such that that classroom teacher is working on instructing grammar while the other group is working on spelling? Which also feeds into your hiring faculty. You want somebody who is able to do that and see that there's less in that regard. As I said, our class size maximum is 12. We do that, again, to support our mission, working with discipling students. We feel that we cannot meet the needs of these students with a whole lot more than 12. We're also very much out of the box in this. Some of the younger ages grammar school, we don't group students for reading. We want to build community. Whether you're in a reading group or on a soccer field, you have those who get the goal every time and those who can't figure out how to tie their sneakers. That's true in a reading group as well. So the question is, how can we meet the needs of that first grader who's reading on a fifth grade level and the one who's still working on their letter sounds? That's a very valid question, but is working. Such that while we are meeting their needs for mastery and reading on an individual basis, we're also meeting the ratio of character development. While little Susie, who's reading at the fifth grade level, is being encouraged and modeled and taught to encourage the other one who is a great Christian model, does the work. You have a waiting. We are at the point now where we have some people standing in line to join us. We do not have a waiting list. We have a waiting pool. It's not first come, first serve. It goes back to choosing families that are a good match for the school. Just one way we go there. Tools of communication, briefly. Thank you. Tools of communication. Development considerations. Don't be afraid to retain the students. School-wide, we're retaining 3 students this year. I don't even like the word retain, so I'm not going to use the word retain. We're allowing the students, we're giving students the opportunity to have more time. Time is an important ingredient for our students of any age, but the younger they are, the more that's true. Parents who are just absolutely sure their brilliant child is ready to come into kindergarten. Another year is a gift. It's time. We have 2 who are going to have the blessing of doing 8th grade again. It's time. It's a gift to them in this particular situation, and each individual student is different. Okay, communication tools. What are you going to see your tools of communication? Your website is your first page. You have a monthly newsletter that goes out. You don't get to, but these are some of our assets. We have the asset of a graphic designer. We have the asset of a professional photographer. We're very grateful for that. Ask God. If you are not sure what your assets are right now, ask God to give you some. He will. Okay, so we're working with those assets so that we're able to put, we have a wonderful writer, top of that, so that we're able to put out a very sharp monthly newsletter. One, and it just goes out to the end. To not just our school families, but to a broad constituency unmandated numbers, or are we boasting about the fact that by God's grace we're meeting those core values, those core understandings? It's so easy to get wrapped up in today's data pushing. I want to get into all the best problems and so forth. Is that our mission? Is our mission, does our mission statement say we want all of our students to get into the very best colleges? No. So what are we publicizing on our website?
On your monthly newsletter, do you write as a director of your grammar school a letter, or do you leave it up to the headmaster
That's a great question. That goes back to the drum, always looking for opportunities to beat the drum. Right now, what we do is on weekly, each grammar school teacher sends home weekly, this is what's going on in class this day, and Matt and I alternate, so every week we're writing something, a letter that and it's not long, and this is actually what's on that slide after what will be your tools of communication. That paragraph there is just one of Matt's pieces. That's an opportunity to beat the drum. I'm reevaluating that in the sense that do parents really be it? Because parents want the quick snapshot. They want the snapshot of this is what's going on in class today, this is how I'm going to prepare my student. A lot of them don't have time to read, hence the reason why we try to keep it short. Which doesn't take time to read, but many of them are choosing not to. So that's part of the question where how can we do that better? So that gets into making the announcements. What does your parent's student handbook look like? Make one. Teacher parents, you have weekly letters. We have notebooks too that go back and forth, so each student is very lonely. Each student has a composition notebook, and that goes back and forth each day, and that's the tool for communication between parents and teachers. For those students who can read, I encourage teachers to use that composition notebook for opportunities to encourage. Little Joey just really has such a great effort in math today. I was so proud of him. If he's struggling with his math facts, shoot an email. Please, you know, we don't want to, because those students are going to read those emails. But it's also that tool that goes back and forth that I can't find your snow pants. I'm so sorry. Back and forth every day. Are there ways to do that in the past? But ask how you're going to make that frequent communication back and forth. Parent teacher conferences. We do conferences both first and third quarters. Face to face is always best. And we need to really guard against that in today of technology. It's so easy to shoot out the emails. The emails are great for facts and information. But when you don't build a relationship, and I strongly recommend those face-to-face conferences with parents again on the grammar level. After the first quarter, you say, this is where we're at, these are our goals for the year. Third quarter, you say, this is how we're doing with those goals we set in the first quarter. This is how what I recommend we do over the summer to keep smooth up the support. Open door policy with parents. How are you going to allow parents to volunteer in the school or not? With parent volunteers, is there a volunteer sign up? There are those parents at every school, I'm sure they would love to run the show for you. They're great. How much are you going to let them run the show? Yes, we want you to come in and exercise your skills. We appreciate your support. Let's see if we can get boundaries or your boundaries on that. As you may have noticed, we spoke to already, some of ours are philosophical. Matt tends to be more philosophical. I tend to be more practical. I think it's helpful. Your curriculum. What's going to be your curriculum? By what's going to be your curriculum? I don't mean what's going to be your textbook. Your textbook is not your curriculum. The word curriculum means your course or your way. What are going to be your curriculum objectives? Be in such and such a grade, the child needs to master their multiplication table. So what's going to be your road to get there? Maybe a bunch of many different tools to get there. Your curriculum, again, is driven by your mission. We need to guard against showing for the latest, greatest, most exciting thing on the tables out there with these marvelous vendors was for our mission. I spoke about encouraging you to get objectives from another school. What are your budget considerations? In New York, we have a blessing of student books being provided by the state. That's one of our assets. How are you integrating biblically, We hear about biblical integration a lot. We purpose to not have chapel. We don't have chapel. And the reason we don't have chapel is because, and this is our, one of our supporting our mission, is because we don't want to do anything that puts a picture in front of students of chapels over here, masses over here. Okay? We want to biblically integrate this chapel in every class. Okay? So what does that sound good? What does it look like for you? How are you integrating writing throughout? Writing skills throughout? Are they writing in that class? Subject to subject, crossing. We talked about homework policy for a little bit. What are you going to decide about special needs? If you have not yet read Simply Possible by Cheryl Tolkien, I encourage you to do so. She speaks very well about that. Each of us as a school needs to decide how we are or are not going to work with special needs. She cites a school, I don't remember where, who has a special class with a particular focus on children with Down syndrome within the class of the school. So they're integrated into the school community very attentive, but they're in a separate class for their particular educational needs are being met. What is God calling you to do? What is God not calling you to do? Clarify that and stick with it. What are you going to do with a student who they've been with you from kindergarten, but now they're in second and third grade, which is often where these students come through, and we realize they do have, according to Billy, I'm going to have a focus on another conversation. On how we might define that. Bottom line is what happens when we get to second and third grade and we realize that if we're going to not do it for our mission, we do not meet these student needs. How are we going to work that through graciously with the family involved? We're in a difficult situation with that right now. That is good. How are you going to assess your students internally, both informally and formally? What are going to be your grading systems? When are you going to use numbers? When are you going to use letters? What will be your need to standardize testing? We use CRB and try to recommend it. One of the challenges in combined classes, we talked about the progression of history and again in grammar school. How do we maintain that progression of history through grammar school? We have combined grades. The reality is that we are going to skip some, or we're going to bring alongside support it some other way.
Decide. How are you going to evaluate your curriculum? Cyclically evaluate it in light of your mission, by subject, by integration, for continuity, for content, scope and sequence. Does it have rich language, your materials that you're using? Finally, faculty. Your faculty is your living curriculum. Pray for exactly the right people. Again, back to they're not going to remember what they learned. They're going to remember whether they're loved.
And yes, you don't want a teacher that loves very well but can't teach. But you want to know those students who want to be loved. What are the qualities you're looking in for in the teachers that you're hiring? What will be your position on certification? Do you care if you're certified or not? Do they need a bachelor's? Does it matter if they manage time well? Does it matter if they're reading widely? What will your teacher application include? That's going to help you know whether they qualify in the widgets that you are looking for, like reading widely. What will be your teacher interview process? Legal counsel, I encourage you to find it. What are your employment laws in your state? Be ahead of the game on that. How are you going to, well, recruitment is always an issue, right? You know, ACCF, you can post on the website what your other opportunities within your community. Pray specifically, God, I need this. I still, how many people, what talk was it, was it, which talk was it, where the judgment said how many people still have teachers on hire for the summer at 98% of the end went up. I still am looking for a lot of my teachers. God works a lot of them and he does that. But pray specifically, ask specifically. God must be better than me in it. So ask, does that perfect person? How are we engaging our faculty in development? How are we mentoring new teachers? modeling for teachers of all experience levels. And I'm just going to end by, so how are we evaluating teachers as well? We're not evaluating teachers for the point of saying you passed the test, you didn't pass the test, but we as educators are always trying to improve. So what will be your systems of evaluation such that we are encouraging them for a continual improvement? And really this comes back to your faculty. I encourage you to have a similar view towards your faculty as student admission. Oh good, another student, another tuition. Oh good, somebody who will teach, I'll take you. No, that can't be it. Who is the right person? Because they are carrying out the mission. And so it really goes back to that first slide, their mission. This is your living curriculum. You are teachers. You are the living curriculum. You are someone who's not more valuable than that textbook. They are the one carrying out the mission. We don't have a lot of time for questions. The state will provide student books that are not considered to be religious. So we fill out a form for each student to be submitted to what's called BOCES, and they will supply the student books, and then they are returned to there. The other type thing, right, is the busing. It can live within 15 miles of an independent school. The state has to provide busing for students.
So correct me if I'm wrong, are you able to have, for instance, if you went to Veritas, I mean, if you talk about Christian worldview, so would that not be
strategies for building it.